This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and guests about politics. It's Thursday, October 22nd. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker.
Okay, it's happening. We are T-minus 60 seconds until Trump is inaugurated.
I can't believe it.
Oh my God.
Okay, you know what? Your elevator's gonna start moving soon and we'll meet somewhere in the middle.
Maybe where that dude tried to grab your pussy, okay?
Okay, I hate that spot, but okay. All right, do you have...
Alana Glazer is one of the creators and stars of the hit show Broad City. She was writing its fourth season with her co-creator and co-star Abby Jacobson when Trump was elected president. Broad City, which was called the ultimate millennial sitcom, often addressed the ways that young progressives thought about, or didn't think about, how politics affected their lives. After the show ended in March 2019, Alana Glazer turned to political activism. In her newest project, a web series called Cheat Sheet for the Voting Booth, she interviews celebrities who have personal connections to swing states, talking to them about the 2020 election. Her goal is to get younger people excited about politics and to demystify the electoral process.
Voting is not easy. I wish it were. What district am I in? Senate, Congress, federal, city, state, local. You're not stupid. The system, they make it elusive so that you feel stupid, so that you're intimidated, so that you don't step up and claim how it's supposed to serve you, which it should. For the first time in American history, Gen Z and millennials make up the biggest voting bloc. We've got this. We are the new adults.
Alana Glazer joins me to discuss how to engage younger voters in politics and how to convince them that they can help defeat Donald Trump. Alana, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dorothy. Thank you so much for having me.
So I've been wondering where the idea for Cheat Sheet came from. It feels to me like a direct outgrowth of Broad City, kind of your answer to Trumpism.
It's actually a direct outgrowth of my nonprofit Generator, which I co-founded in 2016 after Donald Trump was elected, which aims to define minimal civic engagement and raise the standard for what that looks like for specifically Gen Z and millennials, but also all Americans. Our purpose is to gather and talk about politics and government without feeling foolish, as you saw, as you played in the clip. You know, so many people in this system, mostly Republicans, twist their mustaches and they figure out how to make the system elusive to me. And I'm like, I refuse to be bullied in the way that they intend. So we have a few parts. We have two in-person components, or not anymore, they're online now, but Generator Live, where I interview politicians and activists at a Homer Simpson level about the system. I bite the bullet for the audience and I'm like, you know, I don't even know what that means. What do you mean, the hill? And what's it like when you're fighting with someone? And how do you, like, across the aisle, really across the aisle? And then the final component of Generator is Jenny Socials. They're voter empowerment dance parties where we dance for 15 minutes at a time, and then we pause to create a cheat sheet for the voting booth.
And you got, am I right that you got Eric Holder dancing?
Oh my goodness. Eric Holder kicked off my Horny for the Polls tour. Ha 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 ha. I am still laughing at that. It was, this is my favorite part. Eric's dancing to George Clinton. It is funky. We are dancing. He is getting down. He goes, Bill Barr can't do this. And all the youths are going, go, Eric. Go, Eric. Go, Eric. Go, go. Like, for Eric Holder. It was amazing. I'm so grateful that we had that before the shutdown.
It must have been amazing for him, too. You know, really cutting loose.
Yeah, Generator has really become this intersection for politics and culture. You know, the conversation that I had with Eric Holder on the in person with Generator Live, it was chill, you know, like surprisingly chill with Eric Holder, where I'm like, how do you even deal with these dudes who are trying to suppress the vote? It is so evil. Aren't you like, you dick? You know what I mean? Like, it's just this conversation that's, it helps that I'm not the expert. I don't want to be too educated about it because most Americans are not.
So, you know, the other problem we've got here is the candidacy of Joe Biden. And you say, I think in Cheat Sheet's first episode, that we need to vote for him. You say, it's complex. I'm not stoked, but I am down. We got to vote for him. And in the series, you and your guests express quite a bit of ambivalence about Biden. And that ambivalence is not exactly rare among younger voters. I totally get it. Many older voters feel the same way. So what are the best ways to mobilize progressive younger voters?
Okay. So I just want to say, and I'm not backpedaling. I'm still like, is Biden Senator Warren or Bernie Sanders? No. But I want to say there was an arc over the course of, and we like kind of knew there would be, we somewhat planned it and expected it. And then it, as we have been diving into the policies and as I educate my guests lightly, not some deep dive, but as I lightly educate my guests about the policies that Biden and Harris have put out, I am genuinely getting stoked. Hype on this ticket. I'm getting ready to hold them to it. Climate policy, criminal justice reform, closing the poverty gap and getting kids in college for, 2 years for free. Very exciting and inspiring. And I think the more people know, the more genuinely inspiring it is to vote for Biden and Harris.
So on Cheat Sheet, as you mentioned, you interview other well-known public figures, many of them friends of yours, actors, athletes, drag queens, musicians, community organizers. And I want to listen to a clip from your conversation with the actress Jennifer Lawrence, an Oscar winner who grew up in Kentucky, actually as a Republican.
Republican, what do you think now looking back at this party?
I'm grateful in a weird way that I have the perspective, the Republican perspective, growing up in a house of Republicans and hearing why we should vote Republican for tax reasons, for religious reasons. And then, you grow up and you start really becoming a citizen of the world. And my personal beliefs started to change. I thought, well, I guess it is fair for me to pay taxes because that's kind of like paying rent to live in this amazing country. And I like things like hospitals and schools. And it made sense to pull my part as a citizen to make this country as great as could be.
And there is an immediacy and an electricity to all of these interviews, all the ones that I've seen. But I wondered, how do you feel about being part of a celebrity culture that made it possible for someone like Donald Trump to get elected?
Yeah, I feel totally torn about it. As I talk to you, I'm in L.A. and not torn, actually. In fact, I look at it and recognize it all the time. I'm like, this industry is what made it possible for this person to become a political figure, or at least like just grab that seat. I don't, how do I feel about it is I see Hollywood as almost the propaganda machine for rape culture. All we've seen for so long from the beginning, the inception of this industry, is white men dominating everybody else. And that's, and personally in my creative work, I'm trying to make space for myself and others who have not gotten voices to dominate the screen and have power on screen. But I agree with you. I'm also like pretty disgusted with my industry, probably the majority of the time. But then there's these nuggets of hope, just like there are in the world, that counter it. And the light of the good stuff shines so much brighter that it's complex. This world is just so complicated.
So this week, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez launched her own Get Out the Vote effort that could be a little tough to explain to some of our older listeners. She appeared on the streaming platform Twitch to play a video game called Among Us with some popular Twitch streamers and her friend, Representative Ilhan Omar.
Do you have any top tips for anyone playing for the first time?
If you're playing with Toast, vote him out first, most likely.
Or kill him first.
Vote Toast first, okay.
Oh, I wanted to say, actually, for everyone, just a small reminder, let's play for fun, obviously, and just don't kill her first, please.
Okay. It would be off limits.
No, don't take it easy on me. I'm not trying to be Bella with kid gloves, okay?
The stream drew 435,000 viewers, one of the biggest Twitch audiences ever. So this is what you're talking about, you guys using these tools to your advantage. Is there any sign from the older establishment party figures, Democratic Party figures, that they have staff devising new ways of interacting with their constituents?
I think that represents, like AOC on Twitch, that represents the progressive movements a couple steps ahead of the Democratic establishment. I do think that the Democratic establishment is trying to step it up and have their messaging become more youthful. But I really hope that the Democratic Party continues to look toward its progressive, most progressive leaders to lead the way, because I really think that progressive leaders like Ilhan Omar, AOC, The Squad, Bernie Sanders, Senator Warren, they actually reach their audience more saliently. And I do see the Democratic establishment trying to catch up in that way. But I really feel like they should just lift up the progressive leaders who are already there doing it.
But in 2016, all the Bernie bros and others were so excited about his candidacy, just decided not to vote when it came to Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump.
Dorothy.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Okay, so this is at least from like the messaging that I control and where I'm coming from. I don't know if it came out yet this week or next week with my episode with Lil Dicky, the rapper, the comedy rapper turned actual rapper. Felt like his audience might be some of those Bernie bros. And I have this specific message where it's like, dude, do not write in a third party. Don't write in Kanye. It's not funny. I think that, you know, those people who wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton are 4 years older. I think that we've all grown up in the past 4 years in a way we did not expect. And I have hope that those Bernie bros who refused to vote for Hillary Clinton, however angry that makes me, I have hope that they've grown from that time and are voting for Joe Biden. And I think that they just didn't want to vote for a woman, and Joe Biden's a dude, and that will, and as devastating as that context is for me to accept, I think that that will help.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit newyorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
Let's go back to Broad City just for a second, because what you were just saying about Bernie bros and Clinton and misogyny reminded me of one of the episodes where your character, Alana, was briefly a volunteer for the Clinton campaign, and Hillary Clinton made a cameo on the show.
Thank you, Ilana. Thank you for all of your help.
You know of me?
Well, you're wearing a name tag.
Genius. Yes. Abby, hello. Proud demo. Krat. College. Aquarius. I pegged Secretary Clinton.
Madam.
President, she came.
I can't afford to volunteer her full time, but I still want to get the word out.
So I vow to tweet once a week, vote for Hillary, yas, yas, yas.
That would be great. We need to drum up some excitement for the campaign, do everything that we possibly can. You know what?
I thought that appearance was one of the most appealing of her entire campaign. So why did you want to have her on the show? And did you have the same reaction, her being sort of spontaneously her rather than the person she thought she had to be?
When I met Hillary Clinton, when she cameoed on Broad City, which is still just such an amazing thing that happened. I really was taken by what a sweet, warm woman she is, because most of what I had seen of her was being like a badass political leader. Also, I was just like, oh, she's so pretty. She was just so sweet and pretty. I really loved meeting her. And she was like, when she met, you know, I don't really know how much she knew Abby and I at that time. I think after the show happened, she like realized a little bit more what area Broad City occupied in the culture. And, but she was really sweet and she was like, girls, are you having fun? And I loved that question, like to prioritize that. But actually that was like, we got a lot of flack for having Hillary Clinton on Broad City. Wow. It was the Bernie audience. It was wild. And I really, honestly, at that point, I didn't really totally know who Bernie Sanders was. Abby and I weren't, things were very different then. It was a different world. So we got a lot of flack for that.
I'm the mother of two millennial daughters, so and I'm constantly reminding them that they have the power to not screw things up the way my generation has. But I'm also terrified for them, given this incredibly scary period on an ever more vulnerable planet. You must have your own difficult moments. How do you get past them and encourage other millennials and Gen Zers to remain optimistic about their ability to affect change?
The more I get into this work, the more hope I have. The more I actually learn and put the time in to do this organization, this organizing and advocating and activism, the more I see that change really is possible and is actually happening. I really look up to Brittany Packnett and her words and her anything that comes up in world events. The way she writes and speaks to it really calms me and inspires me. Tamika Mallory, I really look up to, like especially the way she has led the charge in trying to obtain justice for Breonna Taylor. You look around and you can see these inspiring people all around, which is what Generator, you know, really aims to lift up, is these activist voices who've been doing it because they're the real stars. That's the thing. I'm in this business and I love other creatives in the industry and how they want to please everyone and connect. I really appreciate it. The Hollywood feels almost like musical theater after school in high school. Like I love that. But to me, activists are like the real stars where I like really geek out over them. And that's my like foremothers in activism and politics. You know, I Shirley Chisholm's book, Unbought and Unbossed, how much she had to just block out in order to function. You know, I think the more I educate myself on the progressive movement and how just to be a, like one little link in a chain of trying to achieve equality for all people on this planet, it's inspiring and helps me just think like people have been in way worse situations than me. You know, when you say, Dorothy, like the way my generation screwed it up, I'm like, yeah, your generation really screwed it up, but we can figure it out. We're so smart, Gen Z and millennials, and have made it through. And the more I get my hands on this work, the more I know it can change.
Thanks so much for joining us, Alana. This is such a welcome diversion from darker thoughts as we enter the final weeks of the campaign.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It is my honor and my pleasure.
Alana Glazer is a comedian, director, producer, writer, and actor. You can find Cheat Sheet for the Voting Booth on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or at cheatsheetforthevotingbooth.com. This has been The Political Scene. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music is by Russell Gillespie. This program was produced by Alex Barron and Kylie Warner for NewYorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.